We asked Ben Nicholson Smith, baseball editor for Sportsnet.ca, co-host the At the Letters podcast. BNS, how are you?
I'm good, guys. More interesting times in Cleveland here. It's becoming quite a hot spot in the last week or so.
Yeah, it's super exciting. And I was talking about how a lot of us were disappointed that the Michael Brantley deal didn't go through. But potentially, with the position that Marcus Semien plays and how fantastic he was in 2019, could that potentially be a blessing in disguise? Does this signing happen if Michael Brantley ends up signing with the Blue Jays?
It actually might. I mean, the Brantley saga was something else. And obviously he said that the Jays were very much a team that he was close to going to, didn't end up coming here, obviously. But I have had the impression the entire offseason, really dating back to October, November, that the Blue Jays were going to add an infielder, and it was just a question of who. And so I don't think that George Springer would have impacted that, or if they had, you know, acquired in an alternate universe JT Realmuto or Trevor Bauer. I mean, I always think they were going to get an infielder as part of their offseason. So now we know who that is and what the terms are, and very interesting to see Marcus Semien here on a one-year, $18 million deal.
Yeah, Brantley said he had unfinished business. I call it unfinished cheating. You know, whatever he wants to do. We don't need to get in a semantic argument here on a Tuesday night. But, you know, the thing that I think is interesting about this, and I was kind of making this point as we brought you on, Ben, is what does this move kind of mean for all three of the Blue Jays' kind of young core pieces? Obviously, because it's just a one-year deal, we presume Bichette's going to stay a shortstop, or at least I do. We know Vlad Jr.'s, you know, crowed a lot about wanting to play third base. Biggio was at second, and I would assume he's looking for a new home now. Where do you think there? What do you think this move kind of does to each of those three pieces?
Yeah, there could be a trickle down for sure. Like you said, Brent, I think let's start with Vladdy. You know, for him, it's going to be harder to get playing time at third base, I would think. Now, it doesn't rule that possibility out. I still expect that he'll go into spring training, have the chance to work out at that position, have the chance to play some games there and impress upon Charlie Montoyo and the coaches and the front office that he can play third base better than what he's shown so far. So I think he'll get that chance, but if you have Biggio and Semien getting everyday at-bats, which we expect, Bichette, of course, in that mix, then you kind of have your three infield positions accounted for beyond first base. So it makes it harder for Vladdy to find playing time there. And Biggio, I think, could play second, could play third. Obviously, we've seen him in the outfield. I think he'll move around. I think Semien will move around too. Like, there's no way at the end of the season we look up and he's only played one position. They're going to move him around. I think it's just a question of which positions he plays more, how often that moving around happens, but he'll certainly be playing different spots for this team. I think it's almost a guarantee. And then for Bichette, I agree with you. I think he's most likely to be that everyday shortstop still, but you never know. If he goes down for 2-3 weeks or even longer, you saw that happen just this past summer, you want to have a really good replacement. Like, it's way better to have Marcus Semien around to take those at-bats than Santiago Espinal.
Ben, how similar is the Yates and Semien deal? Two guys are coming off, obviously Yates with the injuries in 2020, down years last season, but in 2019, you're talking about right up there in the best players in all of Major League Baseball. Is this just, if those guys can get even close to that form in 2019, the Blue Jays will be a force this season?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair that those guys are in similar spots. They obviously want to rebuild value. 2019, not that long ago. It's obviously the last full Major League Baseball season that we saw, and Semien was just incredible that year. He was finished third in MVP voting. He's got a chance to bounce back in a huge way. Or even if he doesn't, like even if he goes back to his 2016 to 18 range, he was pretty close to a league average hitter while playing, you know, one of the most important defensive positions on the diamond. So anytime you do that, you're a good Major League player. And even if that's quote-unquote all he brings, he'll still help the Blue Jays because it gives them one more good player to put around the diamond, one more pretty good hitter to have in their batting order. It just adds an element of depth and stability to this lineup. And anytime you do that on a one-year deal that doesn't bring with it long-term risk, that does have some upside tucked in as well, I mean, that's a good thing. That's a good move by this front office.
Ben, I know heading into the offseason, I think we even talked about this, and everybody's been mentioning it. Run prevention is key for the Blue Jays and this front office. How much better are they now just flat out catching the baseball with George Springer and Marcus Semien now on the diamond?
Yeah, great question. I can't tell you precisely. Like, I'm really intrigued to see. Obviously, spring will be different this year. They're definitely better. I mean, they're going to have a guy in Springer who's fast, who's experienced. He's a good defensive outfielder. He's not necessarily a Gold Glover, but a good defensive outfielder. And Semien's a shortstop who might not be playing shortstop, and that's a good thing because you still have the traits that make him a shortstop. The quickness, the arm strength, the agility, the instincts on the diamond, the awareness of where to throw, where to go, who's around him. All of those skills that allow him to play shortstop, they don't just disappear if you put him in second base or third base. So they are going to be a better defensive team because of those guys, because of Kirby Yates, Tyler Chatwood, we'll see. And they're going to keep at it. I mean, I think that we're going to see them add one, maybe more, but I think safe to expect one more pitcher to be added to this team, and that will help things further.
Do you think this at all kind of changes the profile of pitcher they're looking at? Like, do you think they now, obviously everybody wants guys who can strike guys out. Like, it's the safest way to get out. You don't have to worry about batted ball luck or anything like that. But do you think this allows them to kind of, you know, play around with different types of pitchers that maybe allow the ball to be in play a little more because they've improved the defense in that regard?
That's interesting. I mean, to some small extent, I think that could be true. I think, you know, by and large, it's just going to be, it's kind of boring, but you kind of just sort by the projected WAR leaderboard. And I think that's kind of what they do, obviously factoring in medicals and you factor in character, you factor in your own defense and ballpark, and those little things combine to nudge a player in one direction or another, up or down that board of preferences. But I think by and large, you know, you're basically just going to be looking for, okay, which guy can we reasonably expect based on the data, based on our scouting reports, to be the best pitcher in 2021, regardless of what form that takes, and then that guy's at the top of the list.
Baseball editor for Sportsnet.ca, co-host of the At the Letters podcast, Ben Nicholson-Smith joining us here on Sportsnet tonight. George and Brent on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We know over the last 48 hours, Ben, we've heard whispers about Trevor Bauer and the Blue Jays. We've heard whispers about Chris Bryant in the Blue Jays. Does this signing maybe put those things to bed?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, I'm not going to be sitting up, you know, refreshing Twitter to see if Trevor Bauer's a Blue Jay. I don't think anything's imminent. I think that, you know, realistically, we've heard this front office say over and over that they're never going to close off opportunities, that they want to stay open-minded, that they want to improve at every possible juncture that they can. So that was, you know, we knew that a week ago. In the last week or 10 days, we've actually seen them do that a lot. It kind of becomes, you see the vision that they were describing starting to unfold a little bit. So, I think that they're going to be open to any of those things. Now, I don't think they're going to sign Trevor Bauer for $200 million, but if his market totally collapses and they do their background work and character work, and if they like what they see and there's a short-term deal, like, I don't think we can totally cross that possibility off, just because I do think this front office is clearly in a mode where they want to improve, and Trevor Bauer's obviously a good pitcher.
Ben, if Trevor Bauer wants a short-term deal just to maximize money, would the Blue Jays willing to give him like $40 million a year for 2 years? That potentially could be on the table. Would he take that in? Would this organization be comfortable with dishing out $80 million for two seasons?
Great questions. Tomorrow we're going to hear from Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro and hopefully get a much clearer sense of where this front office is at when it comes to the ability to spend big. And as for Trevor Bauer and where he's at, what he's looking for, he said he's open to all kinds of different structures. So we know that. I mean, apparently the Mets are involved as a team to watch in that market. Obviously, you could look to the Angels I've heard, you know, speculation about the Dodgers, speculation about the Giants. I mean, there are a lot of other teams. I don't think that he's likely to end up in Toronto. Like, it's definitely less than 50%. But I'm just saying I'm not totally crossing it off the list.
Feels like anything is at play with Bauer. Like, if you told me he signed for 1 year and it was all Bitcoin and no actual dollars, I would believe it. Like, there really is just everything kind of on the table. Now, there's been a lot of talk, more so in off seasons past than this one, about, you know, players not wanting to play in Toronto and you have to pay the premium. And then, you know, I've seen some people saying that, well, maybe this year is kind of changing that narrative and you go back to Landing Ryu. How much do you think players are kind of changing their tune on playing in Toronto or wherever the Blue Jays will end up playing versus the fact that this is just kind of being a suppressed offseason salary-wise, or the past couple of them have been, and the Blue Jays are able to kind of take advantage of that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would look to here is just, it's a reminder that if you're willing to spend and you know have some needs to address, then you're going to be in a good position. I mean, if the Pittsburgh Pirates had decided that this was their year and they were willing to spend $184 million, which is the amount that the Blue Jays have committed. I mean, I'm not saying all these guys would have signed in Pittsburgh, but some of them probably would have. Like, it's
for sure.
Ultimately, you know, money really does talk. And so good for the Blue Jays. They're spending money. You know, we spend so much time and there's so much hand-wringing over will they or won't they or could they or when will they. And it's been years. I mean, there's been a period of financial austerity for years in this market. And I know they've run big payroll during that time. But the spending really, really tapered off, understandably so, when the Blue Jays went through a period that was essentially a reset for a couple of years there. And now they're back to spending more. And they obviously have money. And they're obviously spending it. And that's going to make them a much better team. This money is it represents the addition of a lot of talent to this baseball team. They're going to be better because of that. So ultimately, it's an individual decision. And for each player, there's, you know, they are going to make their own calls based on all kinds of factors. But you can move the needle a lot if you're willing to spend to get the guys you want.
Ben, before I let you go, obviously the Baseball Hall of Fame didn't elect anybody this year. Nobody's going in, and obviously we're all waiting on Derek Jeter and Larry Walker to give their speeches, hopefully this summer from Cooperstown. But I have to ask you this. Based on his performance on the field and not his knuckleheadedness off the field and his views, is Curt Schilling a Hall of Famer?
Yes. In my opinion, there's not even doubt.
Okay. Is that right that baseball writers have this, I don't know if maybe entitlement is the wrong word, but why do we constantly need to see the moral compass of every Hall of Fame baseball voter every year when, in my opinion, it should just be based on performance off the field? Why is Ty Cobb still in the Hall of Fame? The guy killed somebody. I don't understand the double standards here in baseball. Ben, can you explain it to me?
No, I can't explain it. I cannot. I'm not sure that anyone can. Like, and that's not to excuse this process or to defend it. I am not here to do that. But to answer your question, no, I can't explain it. The Hall of Fame, to me, it's a baseball museum, and I like certain museums. Like, it's fun to go and see cool stuff from history, right?
Doesn't
like,
surprise me, got to be honest, Ben. Not doesn't surprise me you're a big museum guy.
I'm not a big museum guy. It's selective. but look, we've all...
I will take you, when COVID passes, I will take you to the Criminals Hall of Fame here in Niagara Falls. There you go. Okay, go ahead.
Love it. You know, there's a great... there are some great crime museums in Vegas as well, but that's besides the point. I think... we've also had the experience of going to museums that are too boring. And so I think that baseball, which is entertainment and, in my opinion, very entertaining, well, there are a lot of things to celebrate about that. And for me, growing up as a kid, you had the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa home run chase. You had Barry Bonds hitting 60 or 70 home runs all the time. That was pretty entertaining. I'd like to see that in a baseball museum. But like you say, George, I mean, you've got the whole – you know, moralizing, and then it's a question of, you know, how do we separate this era from that era, and if we're going to make these moral judgments, is this the group of people that we feel is the best equipped to be making
it. Who are they?
Like, I don't know.
That's what I want to ask. Every one of these voters are flawless people who have no demons or anything, or have no issues, or have done nothing. Like, I just don't get it, Ben. Like, these are the people. These are the best of the best. Like, I just don't. I don't get it. You're right. It's just a museum, people. The guy had the numbers to get into the Hall of Fame. Yeah, he tweets some dangerous things. I understand all of that. But his numbers and his performance on the field warrant him being a Hall of Famer. That's it.
Well, they do, yeah. Now, to be clear, like, I'm not saying put Curt Schilling in, because you do run into this whole other set of questions, like, do you want to give this guy a platform, a microphone, beyond what he already has, to spread these hateful, hateful messages? Like,
nope.
It really
Absolutely. Absolutely, Ben. I completely agree with that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah. So bottom line, look, like, it's a museum. Let's make the museum as great as possible. My friend Nathan has this great idea that you should put, you should basically just make a steroid Hall of Fame wing and just have, you know, all these Reuters in there. Cause that's interesting too. Like, if you were to go back and, like, I don't know, put some syringes in there, like, let's see what was going on at that time. That's
some
a part of baseball
packs.
History.
Sure. Some fanny packs. Sure.
Yeah.
Some Gold's Gym memberships. Yep. Keep going.
Exactly. Like, it's a part of the game's history, whether we like to admit it or not.